This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It is an honor to have Representative Paul Stamm with us on the program. Representative Stamm is an attorney based in Apex, North Carolina, who is currently serving in his eighth term in the North Carolina House of Representatives, representing the southern portion of Wake County, including Apex, Holly Springs, Fuquay-Varina, Willow Spring, and other communities. Over the years, Representative Stamm has held a variety of leadership positions in the State House, most recently as Speaker Pro Tem, but he recently announced that he will not be seeking re-election to the House in 2016. He has been a stalwart defender of the unborn, of biblical marriage, parental rights, choice in education, and responsible government, just to name a few. And on a personal note, it has been my great privilege and honor to work with Representative Stamm for years, and I can personally testify that he is one of the most intelligent, compassionate, and well-respected members to serve in the North Carolina House in the past several decades. And it is not only those who agree with him on policy issues who share this sentiment, but also those who often do not agree with him because he is a true gentleman and a great example of a humble public servant. We're thrilled to have Representative Stamm on Family Policy Matters to talk about his career as an attorney, his time in the North Carolina General Assembly, and what's next following the conclusion of the 2016 legislative session. Representative Stamm, welcome to Family Policy Matters.
Thank you, John.
Well, it's great to have you with us. Before we talk about your time in the General Assembly, I wonder if you would share with us a little bit about your background. I know you've been in Apex for close to 40 years, but where did you grow up and what brought you to North Carolina?
Until I was 17, I followed the textile industry. Born in Princeton, New Jersey, lived in Danville, Virginia, Greensboro, northern New Jersey. But what brought me to North Carolina was the Marine Corps, Camp Lejeune.
Tell us a little bit about your family, Representative Stamm. How long have you been married to your wonderful wife, Dottie? And talk about your children, and I know you definitely want to talk about your grandchildren.
We've been married 42 years, lived here in Apex almost all that time. We have two grown children and their families, including eight grandchildren. They all live around Apex, get to see them all the time.
Well, that's wonderful. I know family is extremely important to you, and I have seen you out and about town with your grandchildren, and I know you're extremely proud of both your children and your grandchildren.
My children and my two oldest grandchildren have been participants in quite a few of our public policy matters. My daughter even lobbied a little bit for the parental consent bill a long time ago.
Well, that's
I paid
great.
Her $50 to lobby on a Monday night one time, and she got two Senate votes for it.
Well,
for
$50. Great. That was quite a good investment.
Right, when she was 16.
Yeah. Well, Representative Stamm, you've been involved in the pro-life movement for many, many years, serving as legal counsel for North Carolina Right to Life, and you have been directly involved in a number of key lawsuits on life-related issues. I want to talk about a few of those cases in just a minute, but first, I wonder if you'd tell our listeners what really sparked your interest in the law and also in working so hard as you have to defend the sanctity of human life.
It's interesting. When I grew up in the 50s and 60s, it really was not much of a issue that anybody talked about very much. But I remember two things before Roe v. Wade. First, that one of my favorite books growing up was a Dr. Seuss book, Horton Hears a Who, talking about how person's a person no matter how small. Then when I was after the military, I was in college, and one semester I was taking three courses at the same time, logic, biology, human anatomy, and pre-law. And in pre-law, we were discussing the American Bar Association's proposals on abortion, and I noticed how completely illogical and unscientific they were, and wrote, I believe, some letters to the editor at my college, Michigan State, on that subject. So it was an academic curiosity. It was not a personal involvement with any particular situation. The pro-choice argument just does not add up if you know any logic or any biology.
Well, interesting. And what drew you into the law? Because you have been an active attorney for years and have really made a name for yourself in the legal arena, not only as a legislator.
My grandfather was a lawyer for about 50 years, and he was probably the greatest influence there. He represented many missions organizations and was actually the attorney for the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association for quite a while. And he showed me the joys of a small private practice and all the things you could do as part of that practice.
Well, great. And I know you do a wide variety of different types of law in your practice. And as I understand it, you concentrate a good deal on real estate law, other areas of business law, but clearly you've been involved in a wide variety of different areas of the law throughout the years of legal practice.
But mostly real estate, but in a small town practice, you do a lot of things.
No doubt about it. Now, I want to ask you specifically about some of those life-related cases that you've worked on over the years. I know in the 1980s, you represented a group of pro-life citizens who were protesting abortion clinics around Jacksonville, North Carolina. Tell us about that work and how you got involved with that.
That took about 10 years, not any one case, but a series of cases. There was a group of about six protesters who were sued by Tacky Christ, who's the volume abortionist in Jacksonville, been doing it for 40 years, about 2,000 a year. And they had their usual protest signs. And he took quite a bit of umbrage at the fact that they referred to children and killing and things like that. So he sued them. And in the 10 years, they were never enjoined by a judge from anything they did. And when they would bring criminal charges occasionally, no criminal charge ever stuck. That's how I got involved in it. We were taking the deposition of Dr. Tacky Christ, and he also fancied himself as a normal OBGYN as well. Notice he did not think of himself as only as an abortion clinic, even though he's done probably more than anybody in the state. So he had a fertility practice as well. He published a half-page advertisement in the Raleigh News and Observer that went all over eastern North Carolina for his fertility practice. And he had a picture of an ultrasound with about an eight-week-old embryo, unborn child. And the title of this advertisement is Mr. and Mrs. Johnson Meet Their Son for the First Time. So I asked him how he could be so offended by these protesters, talking about children and sons and killing, if in his own advertisement, for which he had paid thousands of dollars, he was talking about the same thing as being sons. And his answer was this. He said, I never really liked that ad. The ladies in my clinic put it together, but I didn't like it. He was under oath at that time.
Well, that really does defy logic. Now, Representative Sam, you have represented North Carolina Right to Life in several key cases over the years. I know there are a variety of cases there, but tell us briefly about some of those cases, your role in those lawsuits, and why the outcome of these cases was particularly important to the status of pro-life policies in North Carolina.
There were three types of cases. I'll address them individually. One, there was a series of cases on free speech, that is the ability of North Carolina Right to Life and other similar groups to get their message out when, for a period of about 10 years, the left was always trying to put campaign finance restrictions so you couldn't say certain things as an organization. So that was one series. It went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and we pretty much won that one. A second one involved abortion funding, and this involved more than one case, but we started in 1978 trying to stop North Carolina from being the only state in the South that had a state abortion fund when the federal government had cut off Medicaid abortions. And it took almost 17 years for North Carolina to stop doing that as a statutory matter. But we did win one small victory in that case, And that was, even though we couldn't stop the state from doing it legally, we were able to stop the counties. So that 17 years later, when the state stopped doing it, we already had in place the legal precedent that the counties couldn't take up the slack that the state had done.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we also did a friend of the court brief in the Supreme Court to uphold that decision on stopping state funding. Then we also worked for another 17, 18 years on parental consent, and that bill took 17 years to get passed, but then the abortion clinics, you know, filed suit in federal court to try to throw it out, and we did friends of the court briefs to keep it in, and we actually were able to win that case along with the attorney general. And that, in my opinion, reduced abortions by about 2,000 per year. And then more recently, we've had a lot of legislation passed that's reducing it even more, and most of that has not involved litigation, although there's been some litigation.
You've been very, very involved in that legislation and those efforts, and we're very, very grateful for that. Now, you've also been involved in education-related cases, and I want to ask you about a lawsuit that was important to North Carolina's homeschool community, Del Conte versus North Carolina. Tell us about that case and what the North Carolina Supreme Court ultimately decided.
Right, and my role was local counsel for one of the friend of the court briefs. I believe it was for Rutherford Institute, and we also collaborated on a friend of the court brief by the Christian Legal Society. Back in the late 70s, early 80s, Jim Hunt, the governor, tried to get control over private schools through various mechanisms and litigation. And some people didn't like that. The Del Contes were from New York, I believe, and had come down here and were teaching their kids at home. And we were able to convince the state Supreme Court that our statutes allowed that. And 4 or 5 years after that, in the late 80s, it was codified in statute about what homeschooling was and how it could be regulated. It's not regulated as to content or credentials of teachers or many things, but it is regulated as to health, safety. They have to give a nationally normed test once a year that's open to inspection by the governor's office. There have been a few other changes over the years, but the end result has been that North Carolina is considered one of the most favorable states for homeschooling, and we have about 110,000 homeschooled students now in North Carolina out of 1.5 million total students.
That's great, and I know that the homeschool community is very tight-knit, very active, and when issues come up relating to homeschooling, they show up at the legislature, and that's a great thing.
They are very active, and they helped us get a bill passed about 4 years ago that provided scholarships for children with special needs who wanted to get their instruction at home but also needed money for therapy or medical expenses or things like that. And that program has been a great success.
Unfortunately, Representative Stam, we're just about out of time for this week, but we're going to continue our discussion with you next week on Family Policy Matters. Before we go, I just want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to share your story with us, and we look forward to talking with you more next week about your work in the North Carolina General Assembly and what's next for you after you conclude your time in the state legislature later this year. Before we close, I'd like to invite you to follow the North Carolina Family Policy Council on Facebook. Just log in and find us at ncfamily.org. Again, at ncfamily.org. Be sure to like us when you visit. In addition, for instant updates on pro-family news of interest, follow us on Twitter at ncfamily.org. Again, that's at ncfamily.org.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.